All week long we've been talking about this, the president addressing the nation and laying out pretty much his, and it is his, exit strategy for the Afghanistan war. We're going to talk about this a lot during America Tonight because many of you furious, some as you voted for Obama and thought he was going to immediately get troops out of Afghanistan, and others who don't understand why we're even having any kind of withdrawal. This is just a black and white issue for this audience. You either don't want them out at all right now, or and you agree with some of the commanders, or you think they should all be gone. So we're going to talk numbers here, and we do that each and every show. We go inside the Beltway. We talk radio news to get the buzz and the beat on what's happening in D.C. and how it affects all of us in our backyards, and certainly this story does. Jeff Holtzman joins us. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
Hey, I'm great. How are you?
Good. The number. What was the number ultimately that the Prez decided on?
Well, the president said that he wants to draw down 10,000 U.S. troops by the end of this year and then another 23,000 troops next year. So by September of 2012, he will have effectively taken 33,000 U.S. troops out of Afghanistan.
Yeah. What did you think? And, of course, everybody was waiting for the number. But what did you think were the high points of what he had to say?
Well, I thought that a line that he issued towards the end of his 13-minute address tonight resonated the most with folks who watched the speech. And that was when he said that it's not America should not be focused on building another nation. America should be focused on building itself. And I think that garnered a lot of attention. Some people interpreted that as Obama pivoting from Afghanistan to focus on the economy. And right. In a sense, you could sort of make that argument. But I think that what Obama was doing was sort of taking an argument away from folks who have criticized our presence in Afghanistan, folks who have said that we should not be nation building in any other country. And Obama, I think, effectively responded to that criticism with that line.
Yeah, one of the things that I agree with you, that was what I would have pulled out of what I heard as well in those, as you said, 13 minutes. Also, talking about Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, what I understand from some of the people that I've talked to at the Pentagon, when we talk about Al-Qaeda, they say that there's no evidence that Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan has, because this has been one of the things that's been talked about, Jeff, has the capability of launching an attack on the U.S. or even any of our friends, let's say. So the drawdown is not going to increase that threat. And the president, of course, talked about that, saying that Al-Qaeda is under enormous strain. Did you also get that he was trying to focus on, hey, for all of you who think by pulling troops out, this is going to hurt us. Do you think he was really trying to hammer that point home, too?
Yes, absolutely, Kate. Absolutely. I mean, one of the things the president said during his speech was the fact that he by all estimates from this administration, Al-Qaeda has been severely diminished in Afghanistan, and that really our focus should be on Pakistan, where, seemingly lawless region, near that border with Afghanistan, and you have a lot of terrorists who are being trained in Pakistan and then coming across the border, and that's where our efforts should be. Earlier in the day, administration officials held a conference call to reporters, and one of the things they said was that they haven't learned of a credible terrorist threat against the U.S. or any of our allies that has originated from Afghanistan in several years. They say that all the terrorist threats that we need to worry about are originating either in Pakistan or elsewhere, or places like Yemen and things like that. But as far as Afghanistan, that's really, we've really successfully driven Al-Qaeda out in terms of being able to plan stuff from inside that border. Now, there's a lot of worry that should we diminish our presence in Afghanistan, that will open the floodgates for the Taliban to reclaim areas. And, of course, the Taliban and Al-Qaeda seem to work together, where the Taliban will essentially act, as a safeguard for Al-Qaeda and give them safe havens. So there is that concern. But I think part of the president's strategy is while he's drawing down troops, he's going to focus more on counterterrorism efforts, similar to the one that effectively captured and killed Osama bin Laden, where you have small teams isolating in on certain targets and taking them out.
Yeah. One last thing about Afghanistan. It's interesting, Jeff. I'm going to ask you this on a personal note since you've been covering D.C. for a while now. The announcement, the timing is interesting of it because the Pew Research Center had a new poll, and there's been a lot of polls, but this is the latest poll, and it showed that a majority of Americans for the first time ever, ever, want all the U.S. forces out of Afghanistan immediately. Is this a lot to do with politics and getting reelected in 2012?
Well, unfortunately, I think that these big decisions like this are always impacted by politics, and the president's fully aware of that. In the Pew poll that you're referring to, 56% of those who responded said that we should immediately withdraw. And I think that, you know, the president had no bigger proponent of withdrawing troops than his own vice president. I mean, this is largely a product of Joe Biden's strategy. Biden, as you recall, was very opposed to the surge in Afghanistan, which was implemented in early 2010, in which Obama authorized 30,000 more troops to Afghanistan, bringing the total to 100 grand. And Biden was very opposed to that. And Biden has from the outset said that we need to focus more on counterterrorism ops, counterinsurgency, and less on having troops on the ground. And this is a big victory for Joe Biden. It's you know, I think it was met with a huge resistance from General David Petraeus, as well as Bob Gates. And Hillary Clinton, even from what I'm hearing, was fairly reluctant to embrace this. It's interesting, Petraeus and Clinton will both be testifying on Capitol Hill tomorrow, so we'll have to see what they say. But nonetheless, this is a huge victory for Joe Biden. It's something that he's championed for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. From that point of view, one last thing, we got to throw something out here about Libya, because we've been talking about this as well. You know, the Get Gaddafi movement. The House is going to have a vote on Friday on limiting money going to Libya for the mission. And apparently they had to rewrite the initial proposal from Speaker Boehner. What do you know about that?
Well, I know that there's actually dual resolutions on Libya. One, as you mentioned, would cut funding for our operation there, which by Pentagon estimates is costing somewhere around $2 billion per day, and upwards of, you know, $40 to $60 billion per month, which is a lot of money. And of course, our involvement in this mission, who knows when it's going to end. We've had no firm commitment of a withdrawal date. On the other hand, there's another resolution in the House that would basically it would authorize the U.S.'s involvement in Libya for up to a year. And this mirrors a proposal put forth by Lindsey Graham and John McCain in the Senate. So I'm not sure if that one has enough votes to pass. But I think that the cutting off funding has a chance at passage. So we'll have to see if it goes anywhere in the Senate after that.
Yeah. Jeff Holtzman, Talk Radio News. Thanks. All right, the gist of what the president had to say in that very short address to the nation, the withdrawal plan, etc., to me, absolutely seemed more like a campaign speech than any kind of strategy. Going through, I'm going to give my reasons why I think that this is a losing situation for the U.S. As I mentioned, when the president campaigned to get the job when he was just Senator Barack Obama, one of the things that he ran on was the fact that he was going to get the troops out of Afghanistan. And I think he failed miserably on that front. So now it's clear that ultimately 2014, the date that has been thrown around for a while, will be the complete withdrawal date. If we're ever completely removed from Afghanistan. We certainly didn't learn anything from the Russians, and in fact surpassed the amount of time that the Soviet Union had their debacle in Afghanistan, because remember, that was 9 years. We are past that. This is our longest war, twice as long as our involvement in World War II. Have any thoughts? Throw in your two. 800-259-5791. Those are my digits. Kate Delaney, America Tonight. Meet you on the flip side.
GCN listeners, why have you been hearing so much about Dermatol, the all-natural, all-purpose first aid spray? Because it's the must-have first aid product you need in your preparedness kit. Dermatol is made in America by Americans who know there's a more affordable, natural way to treat cuts, burns, bites, rashes, shingles, boils, and many other skin problems. Dermatol is gentle enough for diaper rash, powerful enough for bed sores, and harmless to the eyes and mouth. It's great for the whole family, even your family pets. Dermatol is antimicrobial, antifungal, antiviral, and not diminished by freezing, extreme heat, or years in storage. Dermatol is an absolute must for any first aid or preparedness kit. Dermatol's soothing, rapid restoration of injured skin is so effective, it's guaranteed. Order yours today. Call 800-217-6677. 800-217-6677. That's 800-217-6677. Efficient, economical, effective. Spray it all with Dermatol.
Gold isn't for you? Ted Anderson, president of Midas Resources, one of the world's premier gold and precious metal investing firms.
I get it.
You wouldn't buy gold if you believed that the government is doing a great job, that the Fed will stop handing out trillions of dollars like bailout candy, that Social Security would be there for you. That's not what's happening. You might even pass on gold if the stimulus package wouldn't fuel inflation, or that the dollar wouldn't lose value, or that your retirement would be secure. If all looks rosy to you, then now is not the time to buy gold. For the realists, there have never been more sobering reasons to diversify with gold. Since 2001, the U.S. dollar index has tanked 30%, while gold has risen 300%. Right now, savvy investors are adding gold to their portfolios. You should, too. Find out what they know. Call us, and I'll send you 10 reasons why gold will do very well, free. 800-686-2237. 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
Are you a leader or board member of a newer nonprofit? Then you're building your nonprofit while wondering, are we doing this right? Well, stop wondering and start listening. Tune into WebTalkRadio.net and Nonprofit Spark to hear nuts and bolts advice about fundraising, planning, finances, and more. The conversations are geared to newer leaders like you. So boost your nonprofit know-how and confidence. Tune into WebTalkRadio.net and Nonprofit Spark today.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
America tonight, as I said, you want to jam on it in this hour of America, tonight, because, how many times can I say ATN in one sentence? Because coming up at the tail end of the hour, we've got It's Your Business, another introduction to somebody who's really taken the ball and run with it, with a product. We do it, you know, maybe once a week or every other week. When we find something interesting, and this time it has to do with, of all things, salad dressing. And also, coming up in our very next segment, Casey Anthony, the update on what's going on in that trial. The defense really struggling with witnesses because before the trial started, it was pretty clear the judge said, if you're going to have expert witnesses, you have to lay out what it is that they're an expert in, what they're going to talk about. And apparently the defense didn't get the memo. They thought they'd sneak a few people in, and it's not working. So the circus continues in Orlando, and we'll take you there. In the meantime, it is all about Afghanistan and this war that we've been grinding out now for a decade. And you look at, I think, an interesting comment I saw from Henry Kissinger, something he said years and years ago, where he said, if you have this kind of an insurgency, this kind of a type of an insurgency, the guerrilla army wins. Why? Because they didn't lose. The conventional army, that would be us, the USA and NATO, we lose because we didn't win. Clearly, we're not winning. We're treading water. We're treading water in Afghanistan in a lot of the areas. I hate to say it. And, of course, all the polls, because you know I like the polls that we've been presenting. I just brought up the Pew poll with Jeff Holtzman at the top of the show. But the polls show that most of us, most Americans, don't think this war is even worth being there for, worth fighting. And guess what? The majority of Afghans in the Pashtun war zone feel the very same way. What are we doing? This is $100 billion a year show. And then, of course, sadly, the U.S. casualties. That's what I would care about even the most. Forget the money side. The casualties, what's happened there. Is it worth it? So how do you, you know, this is a burden. Afghanistan is a nightmare for a politician, including the one who spoke earlier in the evening, the President of the United States. Secretary Gates, on his way out, has said that there is little expectation of any near-term progress. So in other words, what was initially thought that could happen, we're talking about not very much of a much progress moving forward, long-term. And then ultimately, you look at this. What happens when the United States completely leaves Afghanistan? Do you think the way of life there is going to be altered? Altered somehow to, I don't know, I don't want to say some form of democracy that is exactly similar to ours. It's not about that. It's about the security. It's about changing the minds and of the Taliban, perhaps, getting rid of the Taliban, smoking them out, I guess, and Al-Qaeda. And you could say there has been some successes there. But with this drawdown and with the terrorist network that might have been reduced by being pummeled, what's happened is more of the chips, more of the bad guys have gone to Pakistan, but they're still right there on the border. So what is going with this Afghanistan mission, which originally the idea from the Bush administration, because remember, this is where it all started. This was about terrorism. This was about 9/11, really. This was about getting the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, anybody that would harm the United States. That's what it was. Snuffing them out, getting rid of the terrorist camps, all of that. Now you've got this Karzai government. Hamid Karzai, could the guy be more ambivalent or nasty the way he rages against the United States? So with Karzai in place, there wasn't much of a chance to win over the minds, I think, or even the hearts of the people in those war zone areas and those villages. So the crazy argument that we need to be in Afghanistan to stop Pakistan falling to the Taliban is, if nothing, not accurate. Not accurate. The Taliban and Al-Qaeda are completely different things. They might be a little interchangeable, but I think you're talking about two different groups that interact a little. Kind of like going to a convention and they're the in-betweens. We're the in-between evil guys. We're not as bad as the others, right? Bottom line is this withdrawal soon enough to your liking? And we've talked about it. We started off the week talking about it. Is this the right move? Now, the commanders don't think it's right. And House Speaker John Boehner had plenty to say about it. He didn't think that we should see a big movement of troops, that there shouldn't be a lot of troops withdrawn. So perhaps this number is to his liking. Here's a little sliver of that 13 minutes on primetime by the president, where he talks about the war tide pullback, the receding by 2014. Here's what he said.
Tonight, we take comfort in knowing that the tide of war is receding. Fewer of our sons and daughters are serving in harm's way. We will be able to remove 10,000 of our troops from Afghanistan by the end of this year, and we will bring home a total of 33,000 troops by next summer. By 2014, this process of transition will be complete, and the Afghan people will be responsible for their own security.
All right, so you heard the tail end of that, of course, that the Afghans will be responsible for their own security. Well, that was the idea. Do you believe when Bush went into this, when his administration went into this area, did they think they were going to be there 10 years? I'm going to say no. So now we have this shift. Was this the right move? Congressman Mike Rogers, a Republican from Michigan, who happens to be the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, was concerned that the withdrawal plan might actually hurt the remaining troops and increase risk in a number of the places where we've been. I mentioned Boehner already, where he said we have to ensure that the gains we've made aren't jeopardized. And Boehner said after the speech that he would urge the president to take into account the advice of commanders on the ground. Well, you have to also remember that we've got an election year 2012, and to me, that's what that 13 minutes seemed like. And this is only the start of the discussion on the Hill, by the way, with this withdrawal strategy, because the House Armed Services Committee will have a hearing on Thursday, and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Mike Mullen, of course, has to testify. So what will he testify to? And some of the Democratic leaders are going to huddle with Obama at the White House on Thursday. Most of the conversation is going to center around debt ceiling, but there will probably be some conversation about Afghanistan and, of course, Libya, too, because there is a move to defund any kind of money that's going into the Libyan situation, which now, how do you tiptoe around that as we are invested? I don't care what we say about, well, we've tossed really the ball to the Brits, to the French, because they're part of this. We're part of NATO. We're a huge chunk of NATO. We are NATO. We are a giant portion of NATO. We are stuck in the situation where you have to take out Gaddafi. You have to take him out. But nobody wants to see what happened to bin Laden in the sense that somebody goes in and just flat out assassinates him. It has to be the proper kind of execution. And now, granted, they're trying to find him. And they've hit other people in his family. We had that conversation with Jeff Atticott, our terrorism expert. And clearly, they're missing the target. They're missing the target at this point. But how long do you keep investing in this? You know, it's like you're at the poker table and we're running out of chips. We're running out of chips, for goodness sake. We're going to need to borrow more money. 800-259-5791. Keep that number handy for our next hour if you stick around, because this conversation will continue. Next, though, Casey Anthony.
Never buy home canning jar lids again. No kidding. When you buy Tadler reusable canning lids once, you'll never buy canning lids ever again. Safely store emergency preparedness foods for years. Traditional metal lids are single-use throwaways containing BPA. But Tadler reusable canning lids are guaranteed to last a lifetime when used as designed for home canning. Tadler lids are made with a USDA and FDA-approved food-grade plastic, safe for direct food contact, and contain no BPA. Tadler lids are dishwasher safe, usable with standard pressure or water bath canning. Eliminate food spoilage from acid corrosion. Fit standard mason jars, are indefinitely reusable, and are proudly made in the USA. Place orders at reusablecanninglids.com or call 1-877-747-2793, 877-747-2793. Call 877-747-2793 or go to reusablecanninglids.com. That's reusablecanninglids.com for Tadler reusable canning lids, the original since 1976.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
If you owe the IRS money you can't pay, then listen carefully, because you already know that the problem won't go away by itself. You can get help today from the leading tax expert in the country, Dan Pilla.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. The IRS isn't going to just forget about you. Right now, the IRS is hiring thousands of tax collectors to go after delinquent accounts just like yours. That's why you need to take action today, and I can help. I take a simple but proven approach to solving your tax debt problem. First, I stabilize collections so you don't have to worry about wage and bank levies. Next, I build a detailed plan to get your debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even eliminated. Finally, I work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. So call now for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829.
Dan Pilla will solve your tax problem, guaranteed. He's helped thousands of people, and he can help you, too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
The American people think they live in a constitutional republic. Land of the free, home of the brave. Right.
Just try those lines on the judge when you get a ticket or have to deal with a big bad IRS.
Instead, use escapeharassment.com. Since 1972, our volunteer group of researchers and educators have successfully taught how to escape tickets by law, and it works. Escape harassment has three different steps to follow, depending on where you are in the ticket process. Learn how to escape tickets, IRS, or court proceedings before you go to court. For free, three-minute pre-recorded information and FAQs, call this toll-free number, 1-877-457-9009. That's 877-457-9009. Or go to escapeharassment.com and see our money back guarantee. That's escapeharassment.com. Remember, escape harassment works.
Welcome back to America Tonight with me, Kate Delaney, coast to coast, all those nooks and crannies in between. It's the fifth week of the Casey Anthony trial in Orlando. Each and every week we go to Chris O'Donnell, who is covering the trial for a local TV station there. And boy, things have gotten really hot since the weekend. A lot of it centering around the defense attorney, Jose Baez, and what's going on with him and his witnesses, and apparently the prosecution saying they didn't know about several of the witnesses. Chris is here to sort it all out for us. Chris, thanks, as always, for popping on ATN.
Oh, you're very welcome, Kate.
So tell me about the scuffling over witnesses, and it started over the weekend, and the judge got upset, and what's happened since then?
Well, basically what happened on Saturday is that the defense attorney, Jose Baez, was going to call William Rodriguez to the stand. He did call him to the stand. Now, the state knew this, but when the gentleman got to the stand, he started testimony that went down this whole line of questioning involving duct tape. And the state objected, you know, rigorously. Is that the right word? Sorry. It's been
yes.
A long day.
I know.
Casey.
Yeah.
But the state objected and said, look, he's about to testify to something that was not in his report. Now, what happened was in December and January, the judge issued an order saying every single expert witness had to put their opinion in writing. They had to explain their opinion, and they had to give the reasons for that opinion and the foundation for that opinion. Well, this was never discussed. So the state said, wait a minute, we never knew this. This wasn't in the report. We couldn't even prepare for this. So out went Mr. Rodriguez. And then the state wanted to call another expert, a DNA expert from Holland. Same issue. He was about to testify to something that was not in his report. This happened on Monday. So again, we were faced with the same issue. And so what happened was, is the judge said, no, he's not going to testify until he can be deposed by the state. These things were going on simultaneously Saturday and Monday. So what happened was, is we get to Monday, and Mr. Rodriguez can't testify. The DNA expert can't testify. Jose Baez did not have a third witness ready. So court ended early, and the judge was not happy because, of course, that wasted a whole day, and there was no testimony for this jury to hear.
Yeah, and explaining that, you need to talk about how the expert witnesses, the foundation for what their testimony was going to be, and it was, you had to have it in the report. That was by the judge's request?
Yes, that was a judge's order in December, and then he amended that order in January because there were some issues involving that and disclosure. So what the judge said was, look, Mr. Baez, this has happened once. I could exclude this witness. That is the ultimate penalty, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to allow the state to depose this witness, and we will figure it out from there. Well, we haven't heard from Mr. Rodriguez yet. We don't know if he's coming back. Now, the DNA analyst was allowed to testify, and he did testify to something called what he calls touch DNA. It apparently, according to him, is relatively common in Europe. It is not common here, but it basically is taking very trace evidence. If you touch something or grab, like, the handle of a shovel, you can get DNA from that. But he was going to go further about duct tape, and again, the state objected, and he was not allowed to testify on that issue. So that is why court was delayed. Today we had an early date, but that was because the judge had a prior engagement, so that was already planned. But the defense got through five or six witnesses today, but they were all criminal analysts. And, you know, crime scene analysts and of those witnesses of those natures.
You mentioned this about the duct tape, and that's fascinating about the touch DNA. I didn't even realize that. So touch DNA, we haven't had that in the United States. That's not something that's common.
It's not something that's common. There are a couple labs in the country, I believe Denver, New York City, and the FBI can certainly do this type of analysis. It's a sensitive analysis. And basically, the defense was trying to argue that if the state wanted to, it could have gotten DNA off that duct tape. But again, he wasn't allowed to testify in that regard, but he did testify about touch DNA in general. Now, this is a gentleman who does not have a master's degree. He has a bachelor's degree, and the state made that clear. And he and his wife started this company in Holland, and his wife basically started the company and made him president. So the state made sure to bring out those issues, and the fact that they've established a lab now in the United States and that they want to generate business in this country. So, in the end, I think a lot of legal analysts looked at that, and so far the testimony from the last couple of days really did not put the defense ahead at all.
Yeah. Something else that happened, and this is going back a little bit, too, over the last couple of days, but it made big headlines anyway. For everybody listening, a few people brought that up on America Tonight to me. The thing about the autopsy being shoddy, according to the defense, so this is obviously a direction that they're going. So it's trying to say that the autopsy wasn't done right?
Well, what's happened is their star witness, Dr. Werner Spitz, who is a gentleman who has a long history, is world-renowned in forensics. He worked on the O.J. Simpson case. He worked on the Kennedy assassination. So this man has been around for a long, long time. And his point was that anytime, as far as he is concerned, if you do an autopsy, you have to cut the skull in half. You have to open that skull and cut it in half, I think is what he said. But you have to slice it apart and look inside of it. And that was not done. So because that wasn't done, his whole contention is, well, what else wasn't done? He's not saying that any evidence could have been gained from that. But he was saying if that wasn't done, what else was missing? What else did they miss? However, in cross-examination, the prosecutor, Jeff Ashton, started asking him a lot of questions about the timeline because Dr. Garavaglia, when she made her assessment that it was a homicide, she looked at a number of factors, including the fact that Casey never reported or the child was never reported missing for 30 days. The child was found bound with duct tape in a wooded area. And those things to her suggested homicide. And when Jeff Ashton asked Dr. Spitz about that, he couldn't really give those details. He couldn't really say, well, all these things happened. And he didn't have a grasp from what it seemed, from what his testimony was on the stand. He didn't really have a grasp of those issues. That circumstantial evidence surrounding the case saying, well, look, all these things are adding up. These are huge red flags. And he never really addressed those issues nor really seemed to have a good handle on them. And it appears, based on the jury reaction, that he was making some headway with that.
Yeah. You and I talked about this already going in a different direction, but it is heavy speculation. And, you know, everybody from the you mentioned this about the duct tape, and that's fascinating about the touch DNA. I didn't even realize that. So touch DNA, we haven't had that in the United States. That's not something that's common.
It's not something that's common. There are labs, there are a couple labs in the country, I believe Denver. I think any guess we give right now, I mean, who knows? It's speculation. There's so many unexpected things that have happened in this case. I have no idea. I really don't have a feel for it. I know what I would do if it were me. And if you have watched any moment of either Linda Drane Burdick or Jeff Ashton cross-examining people, you wouldn't put her on the stand because they will slice her story apart. I mean, Jeff Ashton really did a number, so to speak, on Dr. Warner Spitz, who is world-renowned. And this gentleman's credentials are impeccable. Well, you take somebody like Casey, who is an admitted liar, you put her on the stand. I can't even imagine what he would do. If I were the attorney and had, you know, I've been sitting there watching this every single day, I would never put her on the stand. Because if she starts saying that the baby drowned and, you know, my father helped cover it up, the state has put together some evidence that they say refutes all of that. And there was a big discussion about that this week as well, because the state claims that during a forensic analysis of her computer, of the hard drive, they have found evidence that completely refutes all that. And there was a scuffle about that as well. And Jose Baez was admonished as well by the judge because the state wants to admit this and possibly use this in rebuttal if they put her on the stand.
Yeah. Do you does Baez, because I've only seen shots of him, is there any indication, and of course he's going to be cool as a cucumber, but you talk about the prosecution, obviously the best from what I understand, and you mentioned, as you called it, what a number they did on Dr. Warner Spitz, a guy with amazing credentials. When you look at the other side of it, the defense team and Baez, what is the sense that you get from him? Is he really trying to play that poker face because he's got this job of defending, as you said, an admitted liar?
You know, it's hard to tell. I mean, just based on objectively, if you look at what is going on in the courtroom, I mean, the prosecution has been there, done that. They have been through this. They have had at least 30 capital murder cases. They have a record of something like 27 for 30. These guys are pros. They know what they're doing. Jose Baez, when he got this case, when Casey Anthony contacted him, had only been practicing law for 2 years. I mean, just look at the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
He does not have the experience the same way. If you listen to his line of questioning and how he goes about soliciting testimony from the witnesses, a lot of times what happens is under cross-examination, Jeff Ashton will step up there and start making this defense witness a witness for the state because he's so good at it. He's been doing it for so long. And I think just sheer, and when you put experience into the mix, I don't think there's no way that Mr. Baez can compete with that. He just doesn't have that time in the courtroom like these prosecutors do.
Yeah. Yeah, good assessment of that. Chris O'Donnell, as always, we appreciate you coming on America tonight and telling us what's happening there in Orlando. As you said, you're there each and every day. We'll talk to you again next week, and thanks.
Have garlic breath after I take Ali-C?
We get that question all the time about the world's best garlic extract, Ali-C. And the answer is, Ali-C contains stabilized allicin, nature's antimicrobial agent, and the active ingredient in crushed garlic, but will not give you garlic breath. Scientifically proven in double-blind studies, using low doses of allicin greatly reduces the number, severity, and duration of common colds. Our powerful Ali-C contains 300 milligrams of stabilized allicin. Just one tablet of Ali-C is equivalent to 40 garlic cloves. It's effective against asthma, asthma, MRSA, bacterial, fungal, and viral infections, and helps lower high blood pressure and high cholesterol. Plus, it's a natural mosquito repellent. Boost resistance to infection with nature's best garlic extract, Ali-C. For more information and to order Ali-C, call 877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com. That's 877-888-7126 or garlichealthproducts.com. Fight back with Ali-C.
What would you do with a check for $25,000? What if you could eliminate all of your credit card debt in 90 days and keep all of your money? Hi, I'm Jason Davenport, and I've just completed ZeroDebt100.com, a program that stops and prevents debt collections of all kinds, including debt collectors and foreclosures, with guaranteed results. Forget loan modification. Zero Debt showed me how to get the banks to pay my property taxes and insurance while stopping my foreclosure without paying one dime. An attorney tried to garnish my wages, but the court denied his request because of what I found from the Zero Debt program. Find out how I did this by calling Zero Debt today at 800-477-9256. Tell them Jason sent you and ask for the Zero Debt special and the free bonus promotion about stopping an IRS levy and getting your money back. Tell them Jason sent you and call 800-477-9256. 800-477-9256. That's 800-477-9256 or visit www.zerodebt100.com.
Normal blood pressure, naturally. How would that make you feel?
I'm Don from New Mexico. January of 2000, I had a heart attack. Then my real health began going downhill, and I had high blood pressure, high blood sugar, poor vision, and I really wasn't sleeping well. I was a mess, pretty much.
Don reports dramatic improvements with Heart and Body Extract.
I started taking Heart and Body Extract, and from within a few days, I started sleeping a lot better. My blood pressure normalized, my blood sugar normalized, and my sleep really did improve.
Experience these benefits and more when your body gets what it needs with the assistance of Heart and Body Extract. Order at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305. That's hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305.
And folks, I did not expect this at all. By the 7th, 8th, and 9th day, I saw dramatic improvements from taking Heart and Body Extract.
Details at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305 for Heart and Body Extract.
Time for another It's Your Business. Here's where we highlight entrepreneurs across the country who are doing amazing things. I say this all the time that I read a statistic, 90%, at least 90% of the businesses across the U.S. are small businesses. And remember, the definition of a small business is 500 employees or less. I'm all about food, Italian food especially. And there's a great restaurant that I've frequented since I moved to the Dallas area that I want to share with everyone across the country. It's called Luigi's. And I never realized what was going on, but I would see people leave Luigi's with styrofoam cups, not filled with what they were drinking, but with salad dressing. So you're going to love this. The people who own Luigi's decided, and this is a real leap of faith when people do this, you know what? So many people want the salad dressing. Why don't we make it? And when you go and you make your own product, as I've known many people who have done that, and we've talked to many of them across the country in New York and Vermont and Illinois and Florida, when you go and you jump into this on your own and you're not with a big company, a lot of times it's hard to get your stuff on the shelf. You got to keep on pounding. You got to talk to the right people. You got to package it right and whatnot. So I'm very excited to welcome Dritten Saliaski to the show. He is the man behind Moni's Dressing, and Moni's Dressing is popping up all over the place. Whole Foods for one, Costco's another one. They're grabbing a hold of this thing. Also Market Street, and a lot of people are familiar with that. And I know many people shop at Whole Foods. That's where I go anyway. So it's on the shelves. Dritten, congratulations, because what an exciting time this must be for you as you have literally given birth to a product. How cool is that? Do you sometimes have to pinch yourself when you think about it?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. And it definitely is something that you kind of ask yourself, is this really happening? And kind of all the effort that you put into it, it's almost like a dream, and reality hits you, and it's kind of a shock. It's really exciting.
Yeah. What was the turning point for you when you decided, okay, so many people are leaving the restaurant, we're giving them our dressing, geez, maybe we ought to make this stuff. When did you decide that?
Well, I really, you know, I grew up in the business. My parents have really been in the restaurant business since I was born. I was literally, you know, I the first 4 years of my life, I was on top of Pizzeria in New Jersey. So, that was what I knew. And growing up, I slept on bags of flour in the kitchen, literally. And, I'd see people going out of the restaurant with dressing and in the cups. My parents would sell it to them. And they'd always say, why don't you bottle it? Why don't you bottle it? And I always had an entrepreneur side to myself. And I thought, you know, one day I'm going to come back and I'm going to bottle this stuff. And I didn't want to do the restaurant business. It was a tough, it was just a really tough thing growing up for me. You know, your father's not around. You know, you wake up at 7 a.m. to go to school and he goes to work at 9 a.m. and gets home at midnight. So you don't really see your parents very often. So I knew I didn't really want to do the restaurant, but I got put into it and I purchased a restaurant when I was young. And, but I knew that this was really where it was going to happen. And we tried it out in 2007, and it really didn't work that well. But a couple of years ago, we really made a little breakthrough, and was able to package it at correctly with, you know, cost involved and everything. And we just, you know, we landed one account, and it was, you know, the rest was history, and it's really become a huge success.
I love the story about the fact that you were sleeping on flour bags in your father's restaurant. And in New Jersey, I'm from Jersey, too. Where was this in New Jersey that you grew up?
Patterson. I can't say I grew up there. I was born there and I lived there for a few years, and I was born in Patterson. Off River Street, if anybody's familiar with it, Tony's Pizza. There's a couple apartments on top of it. A family friend of ours owned the Tony's Pizza, and we grew up on top, and, you know, and we lived there for a while, and then my parents had a little bar there, and they came to Dallas during the, you know, right when the oil boom in the 80s, and actually Moni came down here and invited all the brothers and sisters that are on the bottle right now to come down and open up restaurants down here, because it was kind of, you know, it was happening. It was the happening place to be then. And, you know, they started opening up restaurants. And now between all the brothers and sisters on the bottle, they've opened up their, they can attribute to over 200 restaurants in Texas that we've opened that all serve a concoction of the Moni's house dressing.
Cool. Who is Moni? Tell us who Moni is then.
Moni is my mom's brother. My mom's the youngest of all the brothers and sisters, and Moni is one of the brothers, and he's the big culinary guy behind all of our restaurants. And he, you know, through the years, he always tried to, he wanted to package it as well. He could never do it. He always ran into problems. Obviously, you have to be real persistent. And out of respect, everybody says, oh, it's my dressing, but really it's Moni's dressing, and that's who really came up with the salad dressing. There's a little history behind that as well. And so I went to him, and my mother and I went to him, and I said, hey, you know, I want to respect your name, and I want to put it on the bottle, and I want you to, you know, give me the blessing that I can bring this to market. And he said, hey, you know what, I've tried it, and it didn't work for me, and if you can do it, more power to you. And I don't think he ever expected it to really do what it's done, you know, in such a short period of time.
Yeah, and did you start with the – because I had this today, by the way, on my spinach salad. It was awesome, of course. The house is what I had, the original. But you have other versions of this. I think you have at least three out, right?
Right now, yeah, we have the it was funny because, you know, my idea, I didn't know much about the industry initially, so I kind of – we bottled the house dressing, and we brought it to our first partner, which was United Supermarkets Market Street, and they saw it and they said, you know, it's great. It's a very unique product that we see it as being actually a new category in salad dressing, but there's a catch. You can't put one product on the shelf. You have to have multiple products. So it took a little bit of time, and we developed a light version of the house dressing, which is, need I say, one of the healthiest dressings in the market. It's also 0 points on the Weight Watchers, which is a huge
Ooh.
Selling point. It's our number one seller now, which is the light version of the house. And then we have a balsamic country for people that don't really count their calories. It's an absolutely fantastic balsamic oil and vinegar. And those are the three products we have now. We aren't developing new products per se as quick as other companies do, because we're really very keen on making sure that it's a short ingredients list. It's all natural and everything's fresh. It's not something we just, you know, put some MSG and some preservatives and throw it on the shelf. So we're pretty adamant about having quality in our products. So it kind of hampers the possibility of growing too quick.
Yeah, the mass production. Where do you produce the dressing?
You know, the cool thing is you know, when we first started up, this was back in 2007. I did a little bit of research, and we actually obtained a FDA approved manufacturing facility in one of the restaurants. It's a little daunting task you have to do and get some approval from the state and from anti-terrorism acts and all kinds of food safety. So we got that done at the restaurant. So we started manufacturing at the restaurant actually. And of course that soon became impossible. So we actually, we partnered with a plant in Dallas. So now we're producing it in a manufacturing plant. So it's actually mass produced at, 500 to 5,000 gallons at a time, depending on obviously the order. So it's a pretty cool process that you see your product go from from making it in a little bowl with some ladles and then going into a mixer and then now being produced on a line, is pretty cool. But yeah, we do produce it in Dallas, so it's a local Texas product too.
Yeah, plus made in the USA, which a lot of people are talking about that, how big that is, even with food, clothes, et cetera. So good for you. That's great. What are the plans ultimately? Are you just make it even bigger, spread it out nationwide further?
Well, we have short-term and long-term goals. Short-term goal, philosophies in the company, and one of the philosophies is always to take care of our vendors before we take the next step. So we make sure that we've really done as much as we can for a vendor before we take on another partner, as we like to call them. And right now we've just recently taken on Costco. So we're really focusing on Costco for the next at least 90 days to make sure we've made them happy and the product starts moving. And I would say in the fourth quarter, we plan to go regionally with our distributors, with two of the largest distributors in the U.S., which is UNFI and KeHE, set up with them here soon. And we plan to go regional. So we're going to be doing Texas, Louisiana, Arkansas, New Mexico, and Oklahoma. And so that's our plan. And then by the second quarter of 2012 is when we're going to think about going to the West Coast, which would be Rocky Mountain region. And then, kind of spread from there. The food specialty really focuses more on the West Coast than it does the East Coast. But we've heard people tell us, go to the East Coast because it's an Italian product. It's a great product. So we'll kind of let it do its own thing after we go to the regional scale. It's going to actually, as it's done now, it's growing itself. It's really taken on its own life per se.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on the success you're having and continued success, Dritten Saliaski. Thanks for joining us. Moni Salad Dressing, look for it in a couple years. Who knows? Worldwide, you never know. Thanks, Dritten.